and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 583.
That's right. It's a little quick one tonight in favor of the holiday break upon us all. We actually have a nice little special to go through. This came out today as we record this, and it is the Green Lantern Green Arrow World's Finest Special. Tagline, New Tales from a Hard Traveling Era. So, yeah, I was looking forward to this one. This one sort of snuck up on us, huh? Like, we saw the solicit, but for some reason just kept forgetting it was coming.
I think that's fair, because even though there's not a ton of Green Lantern books coming out we know there's a bunch of stuff on the horizon and whatever we are going to end up feeling about the new Jeremy Adams arc, we know that's just about to kick in. So yeah, it made sense that this was kind of slipped under the radar a tad.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump into it. We have the title of the story. Our first story, actually, is Living Free. Writer Jeremy Adams, Lucas Meyer is our artist. Marcelo Maiolo is our colorist. Lucas Catani is letterers. Cover by Dan Mora. We also have some variant covers, which I think are interesting. Y'all should just seek them out there. There's one by Howard Porter and Hi-Fi. Another by V. Ken Marion and Andrew Dahlhaus, who does a lot of Green Lantern art. And then Crystal Kung. And Marcos Draper is our associate editor, Paul Kaminsky, editor. This is in the not-too-distant past, Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen set out for an untold tale of world's finest Green Lantern and Green Arrow, the a.k.a. the hard-traveling heroes. Basically, back in the day, Ollie and Hal are road-tripping across America. Hal wants to stop at every little tourist trap along the way. Ollie's getting pissed at him. They get pulled over, and immediately Ollie starts in with, well, you weren't speeding, and you have Fourth Amendment rights that protect you from unlawful search and seizure. And they're arguing back and forth, and Hal's like, well, I'm a cop, and we'll just talk it out, and blah blah blah. Well, the whole time they're having this conversation, they're waiting on the cop to approach them from the rear view, and they notice him pulling out a bazooka and taking aim at their vehicle and firing. And we see that the targets were engaged by this masked character who we don't know, except we do know it's Deathstroke. And their car goes explodey. At this time, Hal has ignited his ring and decided to take on Deathstroke. Again, we don't know Deathstroke. Hal and Ollie don't know who Deathstroke is at this point. Ollie's cautioning him, but Deathstroke pulls out a gun, an automatic gun, and starts firing. One of the bullets go through Hal's arm. Ollie tackles him and gets him out of there. Hal generates a construct tornado to catch him up in it. And meanwhile, they escape into a nearby mine. Deathstroke chases him in there. Ollie gets the bullet out of Hal's arm, and the bullet is yellow. That's how it broke through his shield. So he was ready for them. And because he was ready for them, Ollie realizes that where they are is a trap. and there's dynamite all around this cavern that they're hiding in. He tells Hal to shield them now, right in time as the entire mine blows up. Deathstroke communicates that the targets are eliminated, and later that night, Hal and Ollie dig up from the cave-in. Hal passes out because of the exertion of keeping the shield up this entire time, and Ollie carries him. They arrive at in the morning at a diner. Ollie calls for a jet for Hal while he goes on to confront Deathstroke and figure out the problem. There, Hal wakes up, bandaged, and being served sandwiches by Dinah. And then Hal says, "Where did Ollie go?" Goes after him again. Meanwhile, at a place called the Shadow Temple, Deathstroke is confronting his going to his boss, quote unquote, who he was told to target these people. They're saying, "Hey, where's the proof? There's no bodies. There's no nothing." Ollie sneaks in, starts a fight, and he's got his back against the wall from Deathstroke firing right in time as Hal arrives right in time for Deathstroke to start firing at Ollie to block some bullets from going into the back of Ollie. And then the Hard Traveling Heroes team up to take on the Deathstroke as well as this other crew. And as they arrive to escort Deathstroke out, a plane comes to take him away and get him out of there. Hal is low on his charge, so they're not going to chase him, but they do decide that they're going to head back and stop at a couple of places to get some red licorice on the way back. Meanwhile, Deathstroke goes to meet with his benefactors, and they have another job for him to be continued next in World's Finest Live Fast, Dine Out, which is on the very next page. But I've been talking for a minute, so I figure let's pause and talk about Green Lantern, Green Arrow before we then recap the Flash one and talk about that.
No.
No?
There we go. If you insist. The art was pretty fantastic in this.
Yep.
That was just, I like the story, but the art is the standout here. This was really, really impressive art. So that's you kind of assumed it was Deathstroke all along, but until you actually got the reveal, just like who the hell is he working for? Is it the League of Shadows? Is that supposed to be like Ra's al Ghul's group or whatever? Because I don't know who the hell they are, because you never get the reveal in this story, in the actual continuity, not related to where it spins off and ties into in true continuity.
Well, I think we get the reveal in the final panel of the Flash. Yeah. About who this crew is, so.
But
because they're trying to appear like the League of Shadows, but it's not
right.
Yeah.
Because this is really what Deathstroke apparently is, really the reason why he's here at all. It has nothing to do with the heroes. It was a fun story. It was good. It was a good interaction between the two of them. It is interesting with some twists to try to make it fit into like current timeline continuity about rental car. I mean, they had rental cars, I guess, in the 70s too, but not like they do now.
Yeah,
but it was and how being like this when it comes to roadside attractions, being this hoarder has to stop at every single one. That was kind of funny. it was, again, the thing that Jeremy Adams does consistently well is he does get Hal. So I think you see in a story like this, it's kind of. They're clearly trying to fit it into a specific time frame and continuity, not necessarily 100% just because of Hal and Ollie, but because of how they fit the Deathstroke thing in at the end, and they tell you exactly where it kind of like fits into the literal timeline of DC.
Which we'll talk about more in the Flash.
Right.
I have information on that pulled up. So,
but it's still nice that without the burden of current continuity and just being able to look at this, that you do get it is a reminder that how much he does understand Hal. He can tell a good Hal story, and plus it's also a good Hal and Ollie story too. So I enjoyed this. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely good. I mean, this is a really easy era to insert an unknown story into, because we don't really technically know. maybe with some research I could find out, just because of how much information I have on this series. But we don't necessarily know exactly how long Hal and Ollie were on the road, as far as I'm concerned, at least in terms of hard traveling heroes bits, because there were, you know, obviously some more terrestrial adventures at the beginning with Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams' stuff, but then it got more cosmic. But every now and then they would come back down to Earth. So even if you're just counting within the time the publishing title was called Green Lantern, Green Arrow, regardless of creative teams, really, you know, any time is like, oh, hey, and here's just one of the stops along the way that we forgot to tell you about. It's that easy. Because, you know, it's not like every issue was like one, you know, one day's event, you know, and the next day they did issue whatever. Like, that's not how it worked out. So, I thought the trope of the assassin pretending to be the cop thing was a little whatever, but I mean, it's a special, you got to set up how, you know, them being hunted down. So, okay, that's fine. I do like them arguing. They're constantly arguing, they're constantly bickering. Even if it's about how wanting to stop and see things, and then all of a sudden they get pulled over and switching gears into arguing about politics and stuff. So I don't know. These guys, you know, I thought it was pretty well done. I do wish, as much as I agree with you, as much as I like the art, something about these old school, like, you know, these untold stories, when we get flashbacks like this, I'm not saying we have to draw them the same way, but what if we tried to, like, I don't know, be consistent and maybe try and color them the same way? Obviously, like, I don't mean like, you know, ink press, you know, and just, you know, getting the kind of faded newsprint look or whatever, but like, what if we colored them not as sharply as a modern comic? So what if it felt more like artistically an older story?
I mean, I see where you're going with it. And it's hard to say that you're wrong. I didn't, obviously my attachment to this era is not like yours. So maybe that's why it doesn't resonate the same way, but putting it like in the context of, you know, the Zero Hour 30th anniversary special, how there were certain that it was kind of like drawn, even though, again, that was we know there were way too many artists on that book and it hurt it. But I mean, still, the tone and the choices in that book were made on purpose to try to echo the feel, at least of the 90s, even when it wasn't Juergens and Darryl drawing the actual stories, to make it look like how Hal and Kyle would have looked at the time. But still, you did get that overall vibe that they were trying to be consistent. And obviously, when Dan Juergens came along, it absolutely felt like it was literally you could have stepped out of Zero Hour. So I get what you're saying. But like I said, that's kind of the problem with trying to tell it with, as the clock moves forward and stuff that we know took place like in the 70s for the most part, and now you have to change it and make it where it happened in a more recent time, because their past is a lot more recent, that I guess I'm willing to allow it, though that was last week's episode.
That's really all I got. I kind of wish Dinah would have gotten more involved. I mean, it's nice to have, you know, kind of the safe house, and she's looking after Hal. I always wish that we would explore the Hal-Dinah relationship a little bit more, because that's the one woman he really doesn't go after, or ever had, like, obviously, like, the modern stuff is like, yeah, Carol, but we know Hal's, you know, has had his time as a playboy, and he does not go after Dinah. So she's kind of one of the women that he has a very unique relationship with. So I always wish we would explore that more. Not that we have time to in this, but I thought just sort of seeing her here reminds me that I wish we could see that more. It's almost like Hal had a sister in a way. The closest relationship maybe Hal has to a sister. I don't know. Anyways.
I get it. I get it.
All right. On to the Flash, as promised, because I said we weren't going to take too much time. We have Live Fast, Die Now by Jeremy Adams as our writer. Travis Mercer is our artist. And then I'm pretty sure everything else remains the same as before. Barry is doing his whole Fastest Man Alive intro, going around the city, you know, doing his morning run, taking care of things. He hears an explosion. He starts running towards it. Right before he trips a tripwire, Hal snips it because he has arrived on the scene to warn Barry about something. But before he can, hey, I snipped that tripwire, which is going to trigger some bombs if you can. And Flash goes and gathers them up, and Hal shoots him into the sky and makes sure that he contains the explosion. He then grabs a car as a shield because he's come to let Barry know that he is a target. How in the first place figured out that Barry was Deathstroke's next target is unknown. Just they say Intel had him coming to Central City. I guess that's all you really need, because thank God Hal grabbed that car, because Deathstroke is taking his shot at Hal and Barry at the moment. Turns out he was aiming right at Hal, and Barry was able to stop the yellow bullet, and he rushes Hal out of there. And so as Barry tries to deal with all the damage and everything, Deathstroke takes off in a helicopter, and Hal goes after him with a Construct Kong. The very next page, apparently that worked. He is caught. He is handcuffed and led off in a van by some military or police. And, you know, okay, good job, buddy. Fast friends here. We're, you know, let's go stop at a little shop and get something to eat. Your treat, Barry. So they fly off, and then we see the transport for Deathstroke. Everyone being saying apparently they were playing a part. Deathstroke demands they get the handcuffs off of him. They say, our leadership is grateful that you kept the Flash and Green Lantern busy so they could make a withdrawal from Star Labs. And they're like, hey, they got another task for you. Deathstroke attacks and kills them. But before he does, he keeps one of them alive. And they say, but the League. And Deathstroke says, the League, you're not the League, which is why I took this job. I wasn't interested in killing those heroes. If I was, they'd be dead. No, I wanted to find out who is trying to pull my strings. So tell me, what does Hive really want from Deathstroke the Terminator? And it says, the end, or is it? The story continues in The New Teen Titans number 2, out in December of 1980.
And the reason why Hal needs Barry to buy him lunch is because he spent all his money on that licorice that he and Ollie were stuffed. and again, it's a nice touch that clearly Ollie and Barry have completely different tastes in which color of licorice they prefer. that's a nice touch too.
But the fact that they both like licorice. Yes. See, like you know, they're both my best friend, but they're very different best friends. But you both like licorice, but you hate the opposite's color. That's crazy.
And plus it's cute that they have the fact that that Barry, even though he wears red, he prefers black licorice.
I think also too that's a great little tidbit. Like I don't even bother wanting to check on the continuity of that, because I bet it's mentioned somewhere, especially in that era. But someday asking if we ever like have a trivia segment or something, like what's Hal Jordan's favorite candy. We know now. This one went a little fast compared to the last one. So I don't know how to feel about it, because it did end sort of hokey. You know what I mean? You know, he flies off and then Deathstroke's very easily caught. We get why in the grand scheme of things. We got to move this along and kind of fit this neatly in a rough era. So I wasn't expecting depth here. I wasn't actually expecting it to be drug out or whatever. But just compared to the previous issue, I just feel or the previous story, sorry, it just felt like it went a whole lot faster. And, you know, given who we're talking about as our co-star here with Green Lantern, I don't know that that's wholly unintended. Maybe a Flash story, maybe he intended a Flash story to feel fast. Because he was writer on the Flash for a little while, right? So,
yep.
You know, that may very well have been his intent.
Plus, either by choice, pure choice, or just by constraints, there are much fewer pages in the Barry story anyway, so it has to move faster. But
true.
The artwork was still good. Yeah. I wasn't as good as the first story, but it still was good. And I kind of echo your sentiments on this one, that maybe even more that the fact that it does feel like a much more modern story based on the art style in the Flash story, I think.
And Flash's costume, which yeah, for sure. I don't know. Maybe it's harder to judge with Flash, because I feel like I'm not saying that there haven't been 1,000 different iterations of every superhero's costume. There clearly has been. But it feels like with Flash, we found the iconic look pretty early on and didn't have to experiment quite as much. You know, just the red suit, the wings, the wingtips, the symbol, and then just the sort of the lightning armbands, the lightning belt, and the boots. Like, I feel like that's kind of been status quo forever now, and they'll change it, you know, for a new run or a new creative team or something like that, or he loses his powers and has to get a different suit. Like, there will be gimmick ways to change it, but I feel like we always come back to this at the end of the day, and this suit we found so early in his publishing career that it's kind of hard to place what era he's in when he's wearing anything this as classic as this.
Yeah, that's true. That is definitely true.
And I think, too, I don't know, maybe the guy in the sunglasses robbing the store with a leather jacket with a hoodie and everything, like, I don't know if that feels late 70s, early 80s. The people kind of around the area, I don't know, the car, maybe. I think some of the vehicles also look a little bit more modern. I don't know. It does all look a little out of place with the era a little bit more.
I think that's probably a fair critiquing, that the other two stories, the Flash one does seem to be a bit more. It's harder to suspend the disbelief about the era that it's supposed to take place in.
Yeah. Which, for those of you playing along at home, we said we'd get to it. They say the story continues in the New Teen Titans number 2, December 1980. So this is actually more of a big deal timeline-wise for the character of Deathstroke than it is for Green Lantern, Flash, or Green Arrow. Because Deathstroke's first appearance ever was New Teen Titans number 2. So that's a bigger thing. So what I did is I went to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, because what they tell you is not just when the on sale date in terms of the cover date of printed on the comic was. They also tell you the actual date it hit the racks, because we know that the cover date on a comic is usually like 2 months or whatever beyond the actual print date that a comic would appear on the shelves. So this would have appeared in September of 1980. So I clicked on what I wanted to see. Okay, well, what else was on sale in September of 1980 to see like where we were with Green Lantern? Green Lantern's published issue that month was Green Lantern 135, which is a cover with I believe. Dr. Polaris. That's it. With Dr. Polaris, and we had an Adam Strange backup and all that stuff back in the day. But the reason this is quote unquote significant is because issue 135 is well into the run after Green Lantern Green Arrow dies. Green Lantern's Green Arrow, the last time it's titled that is issue 122, and then 123 starts, you know, you guys out there have probably seen, it's one of the more iconic covers, I think, despite the actual quality of the cover, it's one of the more iconic covers. It's big, big, bold letters, back at last in his solo star spanning action or whatever. And that's Green Lantern. It gets the Green Lantern title back with 123. So we're 13 so issues since Green Lantern Green Arrow ended. So if we want to do it chronologically, I don't know. They had one last adventure after that wedding to carry limbo, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because that's the wedding that's getting interrupted on the cover of the final issue, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, right? That's the carry limbo thing?
I think so.
Guy wakes up or whatever?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, it's a big deal in terms of Deathstroke, because this is, like, at least if we were to consider this story in canon, this is Deathstroke's first appearance.
Yep, retconned in, but yes, it is.
Yep. For sure. Anything else you want to say about this?
I don't think so. It was a fun read. It was a fast read, but that's kind of good at this stage of the game. And it was an enjoyable one shot. We've had a decent amount of, leaving out the Civil Corps special, we've had a decent amount of one shots that this year that at least have been somewhat satisfying that Green Lantern's been a part of.
One shots are like, are you talking like including
specials,
like
the, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Well, anything like in the anthologies, we'd get a Green Lantern story like the what was it? Didn't we get a Joe one this year?
I think Joe was big this year. It was like the was that when she first met John Stewart?
Yeah, like that, there she was moving
wrapping
off
up the, her yeah wrapping yeah. up the in, city enduring stuff. But I was also thinking the 0 Hour special, and I was
and you recently read the Superman special thing too, right? So there's just been a good year for specials in general.
Oh yeah, but even though that was last year, but I'm not quite sure why I never got it, which was the death and return to the return of Superman, 30th anniversary special, which was really good, which was cool. We could talk about that at some point or aspects of it, but yeah, that was fun too. But obviously, that also feels it. It feels nicely in the, even though it's not taking place in that era, but it feels like a spiritual successor to it, and based on the characters is being focused in on, it works really well. So yeah, it's been, at least when it comes to that, it's been pretty good. We obviously have had a mixed bag in series and limited series this year, but there have been some victories.
For sure. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this brief little reprieve. I'm glad we got it. Honestly, maybe I just forgot the solicit. I forgot we were getting a Barry part of the story here.
Me too. So, I completely forgot about that too.
So, you know, fun, great. Honestly, speaking of the holidays, maybe not a bad little stocking stuffer. And I mean, obviously don't fold it and stuff it in somebody's stocking, but you get what I mean. Like a nice cheap little thing here, a fun little Green Lantern story for your family member or friend or whomever who's a Green Lantern fan that you know, and that you know they probably don't have this issue because it just came out. It's a nice little thing to read. You know, not too hard of to think about. You don't have to dig too deep on this one. Just sit back, enjoy, and relax on your holiday.
That is true, and probably we should mention ever so briefly before we wrap up our third very economical episode in a row that new Green Lantern pop, that Green Lantern Oath pop, the bubble pop, if you will, that is now available for pre-order on Big Bad Toy Store and Entertainment Earth. So I noticed that today, that Which is kind of cool because it's Hal saying Green Lantern's life, but it also glows in the dark. So you kind of hard to go wrong with that one.
Yeah, I'll have to get a link from you on that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. That where do you want it from? It's a little cheap run it's a dollar cheap run
fine.
Entertainment Earth, but
yeah,
I have fine. Okay, because I have Big Bad open, but I'll send it to you after. But yes, as of I think it might be available on Amazon too. I know when on Myron's Facebook page when somebody posted they had pre-ordered it. I looked for it on Amazon like 2 days ago and I couldn't find it, or yesterday and I couldn't find it. This is on Wednesday, the 18th when we're recording this. So, but as of this afternoon, I know the emails from both places came out with a whole bunch of new pop releases, and that is one of them. So, along with Doomsday from the Lois and Clark thing, the new finale. So there's a bunch of cool. There are several cool pops, but the Green Lantern one is the one people might be most interested in, especially because he glows in the dark, and it is, and it's Hal. If I didn't say make it clear, it's Hal. I think I did, but just in case.
For sure. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. This is very likely the last episode you will hear of the 2024 year, which means maybe not the first episode back, but very soon, once 2025 starts, we have our top movies we'll be looking forward to in 2025. So we'll see you then. And if people want to reach out to us, Mark, how do they do so?
LanternCast.com, the email is LanternCast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, hashtag GLCast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, whichever platform you listen to us, please leave us a positive review. And last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern. LanternCast Vids is our video channel. Speaking of, my plan is before New Year's is that great parallax statue that was available for 3D printing. I had that ordered and I had it painted, so mine arrived. So I plan on doing a LanternCast Vids on that statue. So I'm hoping to get. So that might actually be the last thing we actually do in any capacity before the end of the year. But I do want to get that out before we come back, because it's a really phenomenal statue. And I'm definitely gonna name drop Rangres, who did it, because his links, because he did a really good job painting it too. So it's really impressive.
For sure.
But that's all I got.
All right, guys. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
God bless us, everyone. Good night, everybody.
Good night.